Blog Talk Radio.
Did you want
Blog Talk Radio?
Just a second.
Blog Talk Radio.
Did you want us, my brother?
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests on Blog Talk Radio as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Have you ever had a magical moment in your life that you remember? I think we all have had that happen. Tell me, would you like to learn more about someone whose work is magic? Yes, you heard me right. Have you ever wondered what shamanism is? Have you ever heard that word before? Can you imagine writing a book called The Last Shaman? Tell me, do you know what the Hitler effect is? I'm wondering about that myself. And when was the last time you heard about the incomplete self or the complete self? Now, better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that we're looking for? Now, are you ready to learn how to be successful? If you can answer yes or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place. And I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today I will be introducing you to my guest, who is a success coach extraordinaire. He will provide us with informative and inspirational lessons and some really, really great advice. I am pleased to announce that our show today is featured live on the front page at Blog Talk Radio. I am honored to be a featured host, and we now have over 1.2 million listeners. Also, LinkedIn has announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. So thank you to all of you who viewed me. Now let me tell you about my guest today. He is the author of Australia's number one best-selling metaphysical book, The Magician's Way. It is also an internationally acclaimed speaker and presenter who has been instrumental in changing thousands of lives across the world. He has created powerful techniques for self-transformation, which he has used to transform his own circumstances from terminal illness and suffering to living a magical and fulfilling life. And now it has made it his life's work to teach the practical tools of magic to people everywhere.
Are you all done? Okay.
It is my pleasure to welcome to the show today William Whitecloud. Hi, William. How are you doing?
Oh, very well, thanks, January. Thanks for having me on your show, and congratulations on your great success. Sounds fantastic.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, you refer to your work as magic. That's an interesting, I've never interviewed someone who has worked at magic. What do you mean by that?
Well, thanks for clearing that up straight away, because there can be some confusion and even some charges around the term magic. But, you know, in my case, January, really, I use magic as a metaphor because I wrote a book called The Magician's Way. And really, what it is to me, quite simply, is funnily enough, is about success. But it's actually about natural success. It's rather than, you know, high achievement, using all the force we can muster, the brain power and physical power we can muster. It's about achieving success in a natural way. If you can just imagine that if you could live your life just as it's true for you to live, and out of that could flow the end results that you would love to exist in your life, you know, in an effortless way, and also in terms of, you know, spectacular end results. You know, to me, that's just what I call natural success. It's success just flowing out of you naturally, and that's what I call magic. Because in one sense, it is magical. Just like when we see a brilliant sunset, we go, "Wow, that's magical." But also, in another sense, just as a stage magician, I was just at the Magic Castle in L.A. yesterday or the day before, and you know, you see these rabbits, pigeons being pulled out of hats or whatever it is, and you see the end result, but you don't see what happened behind the scenes. And it's seemingly as if it comes out of nowhere, but in fact, actually, it's because there's certain steps that you've put in place, and there are, you know, there's a system that you can apply in your life whereby you can get these brilliant results in your life, in every area of your life, in fact, where it's no accident. And you know, that's what I mean by magic. I'm not talking about woo-woo occult magic. I'm talking about stage magic. I'm talking about, you know, a highly effective way of living, actually.
Well, that's it's an interesting approach to it, and I love what you're saying. Tell me a little bit about where you grew up, and how did that influence what you do today, your background?
Yeah, well, I mean, it had a huge influence on me because I grew up in a little country called Swaziland, tiny little country in Africa. And when I grew up there, it was a very wild place. And people were, when I was a child, the people around me, the natives around me, were very much in their pristine condition. I mean, they were either unclothed or they were wearing skins, you see. And so they were living the way they had for thousands of years before any European settlers arrived there, and it was just me and my family. There was nobody else. And you know, the worldview of the people that I grew up in was very different to the Western worldview. I mean, self-conscious waking reality wasn't a reality to them. It was just something to be seen through to the supernatural sort of spiritual side of life that they believed in. And, you know, I mean, I breathed that in. I assimilated that as I was breathing in oxygen, and it was part of my worldview until I went to boarding school. And then, you know, I was really taught very quickly that that wasn't, you know, that was just superstitious mumbo jumbo, and I had to straighten out and, you know, get with the practical realities of the mechanistic Western system, you see. But then, you know, I had a series of thereafter, you know, in my adulthood, I had a series of, you know, life-changing experiences, crises, you might even call them. And I came full circle back to really who I was, because now in the way I live and the way I teach people to live is very intuitively. And so the ability to live intuitively and come from a higher awareness and see things in a much more functional and objective way, where you can, or creative way, where you can really see the connections that are there to be seen and the possibilities that are there to be seen, then you have to have the ability to see through your you know, rational egoic perceptions of your thoughts and feelings, and see beyond that. Just like the people I grew up with didn't take anything they saw and thought and felt at face value. They looked behind that. And so it gave me a natural affinity with that, a natural ability to be able to do that. And it's like a duck to water. And so, you know, that has, you know, in hindsight, hugely helped me and informed my ability to practice intuition and teach people intuition, basically, to live their life guided by their intuition.
Oh, that is, you know, and once my listeners read your book, they'll know exactly what you're talking about, because your book, The Last Shaman, tells about the natives and the people that you lived and grew up with. It's a fascinating book. We're going to take a break right now and hear about your host, and when we come back with William Whitecloud, I want to hear about the chronic illness you overcame and the unique way you did that. Also, when we come back, we'll share your website information and tell our listeners how they can get your book. We'll be right back.
Lately, there's a whining epidemic in our world. People are even whining about whining. Are you sick and tired of listening to everyone whining all the time? So was January Jones, the author of Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th commandment that reached number one at Amazon.com. Ms. Jones based her book on a survey of the top 10 things that people whine about at all ages and all stages of life. January is a success coach that can tell you how to help others. When you buy Thou Shalt Not Whine, the 11th commandment, you'll find out what people whine about and how to stop them from whining. This is the perfect gift book to give or get for any occasion. Thou Shall Not Whine was voted the best gift to be given anonymously for those special people in your life. Ms. Jones is an internationally known author in the style of Irma Bombeck, specializing in housewife humor, with her book being published in Korea and China. You can find Thou Shall Not Whine at Amazon.com.
Welcome back with my guest, William Whitecloud, who is the author of The Magician's Way and his latest book, The Last Shaman. William, could you share with my listeners your website information and also how they can get your book?
Sure. I mean, very simply, my website is williamwhitecloud.com, and my books are available on the website. And actually, it's a great website to visit because there's a lot of resources and even many free resources and free chapters for the books. But also, you know, any of the digital platforms, you know, like iTunes or iBooks or Amazon.com carry the books. And in fact, you can even actually order it from any bookstore if you have a favorite shop that you like to shop at.
Okay, wonderful. Now, William, share with us this long-term chronic illness that you had. Tell us about that and tell us how you overcame it with a unique method. What did you do? The prescription that saved your life.
Well, and it did, because I was ill for 10 years with a chronic illness. But what was unique about the illness, January, was that no one could diagnose it. And, I mean, I went to every kind of specialist around the world and saw, you know, I mean, literally hundreds of either, you know, regular medical doctors or specialists, clinical physicians, and many alternative and complementary healthcare practitioners, and none of them could diagnose and work out what was wrong with me. But just steadily over 10 years, I was just so sick that eventually I was literally on my deathbed, and I remember receiving deathbed counseling on one occasion, and that's when I knew things weren't too good. Right at the end, obviously it was right at the end, in my darkest hour, actually, of this illness, I met someone who claimed they knew what I had, and they even claimed that they had had the illness themselves. And when they described what they had had, their condition to me, I knew with absolute, you know, without question that they had had it, because I hadn't been able to describe, I hadn't been able to relate to anyone what was going on for me. No one understood what was happening for me, and yet here was this person, you know, not only understanding what was happening for me, but actually relating to me exactly my condition, and as they described, they had had it. And also, remarkably, they told me they had the cure for it, and that if I did what they said, that I'd get better very quickly. And they told me that the cure was to eat red meat and drink white wine and smoke and smoke a few cigarettes every day and have some coffees every day. That was it. That was the cure. And, you know, I mean, the thing about that was very confronting, because I was, you know, really at the end of my tether then. I was in a very grave situation and grave condition. And, I mean, any one of the people that I'd seen, any one of the doctors or professors or whoever it was that I'd seen, although none of them could diagnose me, all of them would have agreed on one thing, that what this person was prescribing was absolute mumbo-jumbo, you know.
Yeah.
And not only that, in my case, in my frail, delicate situation, that what they were prescribing was really a prescription for suicide, you know, that would kill me, because, I mean, these were all the things that had been eliminated from my diet.
But did you start eating red meat,
yes,
white
yeah.
wine?
I did. Immediately after I had the conversation with them, because they convinced me in some way, you know, where I just, you know, went, what the hell, you know, what have I got to lose?
Yeah.
And I did, and I got better immediately. I mean, it didn't even take me weeks or months, or, you know, within days my wits and faculties came back to me. I mean, sure, it took me a while for my weight to come back and the sores in my body to heal and that sort of thing, but effectively I was better very, very quickly. But you see, the very interesting thing about that is that I never ascribed any efficacy to the substances. I mean, there was just something about it that I just never ever believed that there was something about the meat or the wine that had any healing properties, because to this day I'm not a meat eater really, and I hardly drink, and coffee freaks me out, and I detest smoking. So it's not like I see those as good, you know, properties. But the thing that occurred to me was that there must be some way in which I focus that creates my reality, because I was just so focused for 10 years on being ill. I mean, it had started very subtly as like a flu-like symptom, and you know, I just deteriorated, and I just become more and more obsessed with being sick, and, you know, spending my life, you know, being a sick person. And I just got sicker and sicker, and then when I just went, oh, you know, what the hell, you know, I'm just going to go out here with some, you know, there was somehow a change in mentality, and I didn't know how it worked, but I really got that it was a message, that there's something about this all happened within me, the power was within me, there was some way in which I could direct something in me that could make me on my, you know, take me to my deathbed over 10 years and then instantly make me better again. And so, I mean, that had a huge influence on my life. And you know, I mean, my purpose in life from that point on was to discover how this principle worked and then apply it to my life. The thing that I didn't realize was that what that would lead me to was to becoming something of an expert on the subject, and then, you know, teaching it to others and you know, writing and then traveling the world speaking about it as well.
Wow. Now, your book is titled The Last Shaman. What is shamanism? Could you give us a definition of it and tell us how it's relevant to people's lives in the modern world?
Yeah, well, it's very relevant, actually, although it's an ancient practice. And you see, I mean, the shamans were just it's a word derived from a Tibetan tribe. Sorry, not a Tibetan tribe, a Siberian tribe. And you know, it's their word for healer. A shaman is just a traditional healer. But the thing about shamans, and I've met many around the world, is that, you know, traditionally their role in society was to divine wisdom, the ability to divine wisdom, and also to heal people. And so, again, you see, I'm not advocating that we revert to some kind of traditional way of living that's long past, but just like I used magic as a metaphor in my first book, shamanism is the last shaman is a metaphor again in the sequel to The Magician's Way, in that, you see, if we mean to be powerful and live self-empowered lives and you know, have success flow naturally in our lives, you know, as I said before at my introduction, there's a system to that, and part of the system is, you know, the ability to know for yourself and have wisdom for yourself. And so that's the relevance here, is that, you know, the thing is about all of us, about us human beings, is that we're powerful beyond measure, and mostly our power lies in an inner resource, in the fact that actually if we have the ability to go within ourselves and refer to ourselves, we actually know best for ourselves. We know best for ourselves how to heal, how to run businesses, how to deal with our families, how to behave in love, everything, you know. So it's really a return to the self and a return to the reliance on the most powerful thing that's going to guide us through life is not outer wisdom. It's our own inner wisdom. Outer wisdom is going to get us so far, but what is going to serve us brilliantly in our lives, what is going to be most relevant to our lives, is what we know for ourselves, and so therefore the shamanism as a metaphor is very relevant and very apt, as anyone will find when they read the story what I'm really talking about, because it's a vehicle for transferring the system of being able to know and be guided by your own inner knowing, really.
And you write about and speak about intuition so much in your book, and it's such an important part of your story. Right now we're going to take a break and hear from a sponsor, but when we come back with William White Cloud, I'd like to hear about the Hitler effect and some of the other things in his wonderful book. We'll be right back.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
I sure hope you are socially fit, and I know I'm working on becoming that, too. William White Cloud, let's ask you, what do you refer to as the Hitler effect?
Well, that's a term one of my characters in The Last Shaman actually invents to describe a dynamic that's so prevalent in our life today. And while it's very dramatic and charged with the term Hitler, it nevertheless does describe something that is true about ourselves. And particularly in this day and age when, people are very influenced by things like The Secret and the Law of Attraction.
Uh-huh,
and it's almost common knowledge that your focus creates your reality, which was the thing that I learned through my illness, is that there's some way in which I focus that then determines my experience in life. And we all seem to know that now. But the thing is that people practice and know that on a shallow level. On a level, actually, that is so shallow that it can be highly detrimental to them, because they think that, well, if you focus on something, like I've done a lot of talkback radio in America, and people say to me, when they get a chance to ask me questions, they say, well, the thing is, none of us have got jobs, and we're focusing on jobs, and we're thinking about the jobs, and we're dreaming about the jobs, and we're feeling the feeling of having a job, and we're not getting jobs. Why is that not happening with him? And it's like, well, because the thing is that what you think you focused on is very rarely what you actually focused on, really, in terms of how this works, is that your subconscious, the part of you, whatever you call it, by any name, the part of you that creates your reality in this way, is looking at what you focused on. But what you self-consciously focused on can be the tip of the iceberg. Needn't be, you want a car or you want a loving partner or whatever it is that you're dreaming about, a pile of money, whatever. You're thinking, well, this is what I want. I can see it. But, you see, the thing is that your consciousness is a very deep thing, like an iceberg. It goes a lot deeper than the tip. And really, what really determines your focus in life, what really accounts for your true focus in life, is what sponsors your focus, what sponsors your self-conscious focus. Like, if you're craving for love, maybe you're insecure. Maybe it's an insecurity driving that. It's just like maybe an insecurity is driving your need for finances. And so there's much more going on in your consciousness than you might self-consciously be aware of. And whatever is motivating the values and the motivations behind what you seek actually have a lot more power. And you've got to learn to understand what your true motivations are, and mm-hmm. and learn to come from focuses that are in some sense pure, that aren't derived from insecurity or something, because otherwise it's those insecurities that will manifest rather than what you think you want. And you know, in the book, the character uses Hitler as an example, because he says, look at Hitler, you know, he was a power monger, and he was someone who had so much, you know, achieved so much power, and he was invading countries and ruling half of the world. But if you look at what was motivating him, it's a historical fact that he had this terrible childhood, and
right.
and he was a humiliated, disempowered person, and that's what drove his power. You know, that's what drove his power mongering, and in the end, you see what prevailed. He was utterly crushed, as was the nation he led, and so he had this terrible downfall. That reflected ultimately where he came from his mm-hmm. utter sense of powerlessness and shamefulness and etc. And so, like that, in an extreme example, is it's a real mirror of ourselves on a less extreme level.
Oh my gosh, it's so interesting, because you talk about the complete self and the incomplete self. And it's kind of hard to really figure out where you are in this portrait. Sometimes I think I'm complete, and then other days there's no way that I'm complete.
Well, you see, the thing is, it's just an illusion. I mean, you are complete. Every day of your life, you are complete. But we all live with a sense of incompleteness, because
mm-hmm.
the thing
yeah.
is about us is that, you know, for us to have a sense of individual existence, to individuate, because, you know, a scientific fact again, that when a baby is born, it can't distinguish itself from its mother or its environment. That has to be manufactured. It actually has to be fabricated. And that's
right.
done by taking on beliefs, which then make you feel separate. And these fundamental beliefs, I'm not worthy, I'm not safe, or whatever they are, they're beliefs that make you feel like you're separate and you're incomplete, and there's something incomplete about you. There's something that has to be resolved about you. And you know, they give you a sense of separation. That's good. They give you identity, which gives you this individual, great individual sense of existence. And you think you're January Jones, and I think I'm William Whitecloud, and we're running around the world having fun as those individuals. But the belief that created those identities hold that we're separate and that we're incomplete. And then our tendency is to buy into that and run around trying to resolve that. But
sure.
in trying to resolve that, because we're focused on that, we perpetuate that. We then perpetuate the worthlessness or the not belonging or whatever it is that reinforces that sense. So it's a very effective system for making us feel like individual beings.
Oh,
but its side effect is that it can cause us to suffer, in a sense, in that we running around trying to resolve our incompleteness, and great power and wisdom and effectiveness comes to the person who goes, you know what, I'm already complete. I don't have to resolve all of that. I can, you know, if I was a whole complete person, what would I get on with in my life and get on with that?
William, I have to get on with ending the show, and I just want to thank you so much for coming and visiting with us, and I hope you will come back.
Oh, definitely. Thanks so much. Great chatting to you.
Lovely. My upcoming guests for the rest of the week are all exciting, eclectic, and energizing. You will hear inspiring information. This is the show. People share their stories and secrets for success. So for now, stop whining, start smiling, and start sharing our show with everyone you know. And thank you, William Whitecloud.
Thanks so much, January.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity, plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.